FM. This is member supported. WPFW, Washington. Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon. Welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM. The name of the show is News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time here in Washington, D.C. You can tune in on 89.3 FM. And if you were way out there somewhere, you can't pick up 89.3 FM. And certainly our station is not up to full power right now. There's lead abatement of all things going on at the location of our tower. So we're not at full power. But if you're out there and you can't pick us up at full power, then just go to WPFW.org and we are streaming live. That's WPFW.org. Go there. You can listen live to all of our shows. But right now, I'm here with
Mark Levine. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, it'll be on my website, marklevinetalk.com. You can listen in detail if you miss any part of this or any other show we've done, including that terrific show we did on Marissa Alexander a couple of weeks back where you were ahead of the curve, Garland.
Yes, Mark and I, we talked to Marissa. You probably heard of Marissa Alexander. Tonight we will, I better talk about a subject tonight. Tonight we will be, of course, talking about the Trayvon Martin case, and we will be taking calls, and I imagine there's one or two people out there who are going to want to call in and make their point. And of course, Mark has a big point to make in a minute. We're going to get to it. But the fact of the matter is, yes, there was for those of you who have heard of Marissa Alexander, she is the black woman in Florida who shot a wall. She was dealing with her husband who has been abusive in the past, who's beaten her, broken her nose, put her in the hospital, and she shot a warning shot into a wall. No one was injured. She got 20 years. They rejected her stand your ground defense. She had just had a baby 9 days before, and she is now serving 20 years in prison for shooting a warning shot. And we had her attorney on, and we did a complete hour on that show. You want to go to marklevinetalk.com. Mark, when they go there, what will they see? How do they get to the show?
What you do is if you just go to where it says archive and you click search, you can type in Marissa Alexander. You can just click radio and scroll down, and eventually you'll see the show. It wasn't that long ago. It was just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was like the end of June, but Mark and I did a great show when we had her attorney, Kevin Cobble, I believe. We had her attorney on to talk about the case. So if you want to know all you need to know about the Marissa Alexander case and other things, News Views is the place to go. Mark and I are ahead of the curve, and we're all over this stuff. Tonight we're talking about Trayvon Martin. I've got plenty to say.
And so do I.
Yeah, I've got what I think is very interesting, something we'll talk about in a few. Just I'm not going to really, spend the whole hour talking about it, but a few minutes here and there. The Zimmerman juror spoke out, and I think there's a few things in there we need to look at. But first, Mark has some things to say that he feels are very, very important. And if Mark has to say it, then I feel it's very, very important. So why don't give Mark a few minutes to really to set us straight so we can understand his perspective.
I appreciate
the whole
that.
Case and the issue.
I appreciate that, Garland. The Trayvon Martin case hit me very hard. I know it hit many of you very hard, that an unarmed child could be shot dead in America in his own neighborhood, looking for his own place where he had every right to be. It reminded me of how much we still have to do in America. And many of you know on News Views, I wrongly predicted, and I admit when I'm wrong, I wrongly predicted there'd be a manslaughter verdict in this case. I can go into later on in the hour if you want all the legal reasons why I thought so and the mistakes the prosecution, the judge made. But I won't deny that part of the reason why I felt there would be a manslaughter verdict is because I wanted to see justice. I wanted to see justice for Trayvon Martin. I don't believe a person can or should be able to legally arm themselves with a gun, go out, stalk an innocent teenager, shoot him dead, and then have no penalty there. But as I was listening to the president today, and if you didn't hear President Obama, after the show, go to YouTube. I'm sure it's there. Listen, it's about 15, 20 minutes, the president speaking off the cuff very eloquently about race in America. Frankly, I think he said more in those 15 minutes about race maybe than he said his entire presidency. And he was talking about the conversations we need to have in America. And I'd like to start the conversation tonight and encourage you to have conversations. Look, I'm a white guy. I can't claim that I fully understand what it's like to be African American. But I think I have some understanding. I have some understanding from my experiences, from my friends, from my family. I have family who's African American, from my colleagues, from all the people I've known, from Garland and everyone I've worked with. Many of you know, some of you know, I was the token white guy on Black Talk Radio on The Power, Sirius XM, for a couple years. I was the only white guy on a network that was otherwise 24/7 African American. And I was challenged then, and quite rightly, you know, with all the radio stations out there, all the radio stations that cater to white people, you know, why are you on our little channel? And I said, and I was glad I was asked the question. I'm glad to be asked those questions. I said that white and black people need to talk with each other. I think we all know, and if you don't know, I'm telling you now, but I think we all know, when a white person talks to a white person about race and a black person comes in the room, the instinct is to immediately lower your voice, check what you're saying, make sure it's okay. And I dare say I think it's also true that when black people talk about race or talk about white people and a white person enters the room, there's the exact same reaction. I think we live in a country where people feel safe in their own communities. We have lots of communities in America. We have lots of neighborhoods. Sure, there was enforced segregation in the past. To some extent, it's true today. To some extent, it's just because El Salvadorans want to live next to El Salvadorans, and Korean Americans want to live next to Korean Americans. But we've got to get out more. Trayvon Martin was considered suspicious by George Zimmerman in his own neighborhood because George Zimmerman wasn't used to talking to black kids. George Zimmerman found him strange because he was looking around and trying to figure out where in a dark, rainy night where all the houses look kind of alike exactly was the house where his father was staying with his fiancée. I think if it were a white boy wandering around looking lost, a normal reaction, or the reaction probably of George Zimmerman would have been, excuse me, son, are you lost? That's what I say when I see someone wandering around the streets of Washington, D.C. looking lost. I say, excuse me, are you lost? Can I help you? And people are usually very grateful, and I'll tell them where the Capitol is or the Washington Monument or whatever it is they came to see. George Zimmerman did not have that reaction. He immediately, before talking with Trayvon, just seeing a black kid with a hoodie, what he said on that 911 tapes is chilling. He said these punks always get away. He used pejoratives I can't use on radio. He said pejorative, he's running away, as if that were a bad thing. He went after him with his gun. And I have to think that George Zimmerman did not have enough experience in his life meeting and talking with people outside of his community. Good friend of mine, white guy, works mostly with black women. And he tells me about a friend of his and he says that I met her and she was kind of quiet. And my friend had told me how, you know, very full of personality she was. And I said, why was she so quiet? And he said, well, she's kind of uncomfortable around white people. And I said, but you're white. And she said, yeah, well, they know me and I'm part of the community. They consider me black. Which I guess they do in an office that's 90% black. And I get that. I understand that. And I want to say this. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a third-generation Southerner. My mom moved to Nashville when she was 7 from Pascagoula, Mississippi. My grandfather grew up in New Orleans. I think I have some inkling of what the South is all about and, frankly, what race relations are all about. But even though I'm a Southerner, I've always been an outsider. a different kind of outsider, but an outsider. I'm Jewish. I'm gay. I certainly have feared white people who I felt were dangerous to me, or even some black people who I felt were anti-Semitic or anti-gay. I know what it's like to be afraid of people. To me, this case was all about fear. It was George Zimmerman being afraid of Trayvon Martin. It was juror B-37 being afraid of a black kid. She didn't say it's because he's black, but come on, if it were a white kid, would she be? And it's about black people reasonably fearing the justice system, fearing the creepy-ass George Zimmermans of the world. This is all about fear. And so I just want to make a plea to do what the president said to do today, to talk with each other, to get outside your element, to talk with people who are not like yourself. If you're white, talk to black people. If you're black, talk to white people. Talk to Asians. Talk to Latinos. Talk to Jews. Talk to gay people. You know, if you want to know what it's like to have a gay person, I've had people, black people say to me, well, there are not many blacks in our gay blacks in our community. And I say, well, come with me. I'll show you a gay bar entirely full of blacks. People don't know what's out there unless they talk. And I'll just say this. If somebody comes to you and asks you a stupid question, maybe even a racist question, maybe a question that betrays a lack of understanding, try to see whether their question comes from malice or ignorance. I dare say most of the time it'll come from ignorance. And when I was on Black Talk Radio and someone would ask me an ignorant question, I would answer the best of my ability. A lot of times it'd be about Jewish things, and I wouldn't be offended because I'd much rather people ask the question and answer it honestly than talk behind my back and believe all kinds of craziness. So if someone comes and asks you a question, it may well be ignorant. Teach them. Teach them. Blacks teach whites. Whites teach blacks. Everyone teach everyone about tolerance and understanding. We can do this. And just the president inspired me to carry on the conversation because I'm ashamed of what happened. I'm ashamed as an American. This should not happen in America. It has happened for too many years. It's happened for too many centuries. I realize it's not going to end tomorrow. But I really firmly believe that if we all talk to each other and make sure that we understand each other and recognize that the person who's different from us isn't really that different from us. We all live and love. We all bleed. We all get hungry. We all just want to live our lives in peace. If we just talk to each other, I really think we can finally come away to heal.
Once again, my name is Garland Nixon, and that was Mark Levine with a
get off my soapbox now,
with
Garland.
A very enlightened, a very enlightened opinion.
I just had to say that. That's my sermon. I don't often deliver sermons on radio. But,
yeah, well, and I'm sure you kind of had to unload. Mark.
I did. I feel better now. Actually,
And it's a very emotional time.
I think.
And we need to discuss it because one of the things that we need to talk about here, and it's almost 6:15. You're listening to WP.
Did I talk that long?
No. We needed it. You listen to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. And I'm going to give the phone number out here in a bit, about 25 after I'll give the phone number out. And you can call in and you can give me your opinion about the Trayvon Martin case. But there's a couple things going on here from the perspective of a black person. Part of it, and this is very important, and we hear this talked about, part of it is an issue of symbolism. Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman and this trial are all symbolic of something. I was talking to someone the other day, and I said, you know, not just black Americans, white Americans, Native, everybody who is American can thank black people for a lot of the rights that they've have due to the oppression that they've had in the legal oppression. Many of the Supreme Court findings, and black and poor people and the downtrodden, many of the Supreme Court findings that give us the protections that we have today are because some black people in the South were oppressed and were mistreated and they got to the Supreme Court because some guy in Florida named Escobedo, who was a poor guy, couldn't get a lawyer, and now we can all get an appointed lawyer. So a lot of the rights that we have now are because some people were oppressed and the justice system was wrong. But
And the Montgomery bus boycott, and the March on Selma, and Rosa Parks, and the March on Washington, and the whole Civil Rights Movement, and the sit-ins at Woolworth, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And so what are they symbolic of? Trayvon Martin is symbolic of and this is something that hasn't been discussed enough, the fear that black males have of the police and the criminal justice system. Now people are just starting to talk about the reality in America that black parents tell their sons, not so much their daughters, their sons, if you see the police, you better be, you know, you better be, stick your hands up and, you know, close your eyes and pray. You know, if you go, if that black people, there's a fear, as a black person, and I bet Mark.
It's all about fear.
I gotta be honest.
It's about blacks fearing whites and whites fearing blacks. This whole case is about fear.
And I'm a person who, you know, I've never been in any trouble in my life and pretty good background record. But somewhere in the back of my mind has always been a fear that I was going to get accused of a crime that I didn't commit. That I was going to end up in front of an all-white jury, you know, and end up, you know, in solitary confinement in Leavenworth or somewhere. I mean, I would be willing to bet that every black person somewhere, every black man particularly, somewhere in the back of their mind has a feeling that that's going to happen. I remember when I was 16, riding down the road with two other friends. We're 16 years old, and they're one of the guy's mother's car. We get pulled over by the cops, and they take us to some gas station where there was a robbery. And we just sit in the car, and I'm thinking, later when I think back, how much could they really have thought we did? They didn't handcuff us. They just sat us in the car and said, let's go for a ride. And we were like,
maybe they thought you'd confess or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But this is, Mark, I was 16, right? I was so ignorant of what was going on at that age. I was looking around like, wow, I'm getting a ride in a police car.
Oh my God.
This is so cool. And I'm looking around and I see the lights and things blinking, and I'm like, man, I had no concept that I was being accused. So we get there, we get out of the car, and I find out later that there was three black males in a burgundy car of some type that didn't in any way fit the description of the one we were in. We get out of the car, and as soon as we get out of the car, the people at this place that had been robbed looked at us and said, they're kids, as if this, like, what the?
They must have said adults did this.
Yeah, right. And the cops
rounded up the first three black faces they could find.
You know, so they looked at us and they looked at these cops with astonishment. Wow. And it was like, they're children. What are you bringing three kids? And we're just sitting there, three 16-year-old kids with, you know, grins on our faces and Nike, you know, shoes on and jeans and a t-shirt. So off we go. But now that I look back, for God's sake, Mark, I could still be in jail if somebody had got shot.
You'd been the Scottsboro Boys.
Yeah.
Happened to them. They were kids, too.
Right. You know, they were basically beaten until I guess if it was back then, I'd have been beaten until I confessed.
You better be glad that the people who were robbed weren't racist.
And just said, who cares? Any black people will do.
Exactly. I mean, there's certainly people who've done that.
Right. And there are instances where, if you remember when LAPD, the big thing, where several years back where they had to let a lot of people out because there was one squad that was planting guns, planting drugs. Come back. There's a gun under the seat. And, you know, I've never seen before in my life. And boom, I'm done. So black people, black males walk around with a fear that nobody else walks around with.
People walk around with a fear of black males. That's right. The part that juror Bree 37. That's George Zimmerman. That's what I'm trying. There's a mutual fear.
Yeah, and let me read this because this is important. Because the question,
And frankly, the white fear is much more unreasonable than the black fear.
Right.
But they're both fears, and they need to be dealt with.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about juror B 37, an interesting character to say the least.
Yeah.
And where she, if you read the text of her statements on CNN, it's fairly obvious that that no matter what he was walking.
I think she and George need to spend some time
together. I think if he wasn't married.
She's looking forward to hanging out with
George. Yeah, I think if he wasn't married, that would be a prospect in her mind. But here's what she says. So the issue of race. Okay.
That's how she called him, George.
So Anderson Cooper says, he says, so you don't believe race played a case in the role? I don't think it did. I think if there was another person, Spanish, white, Asian, if they came in the same situation where Trayvon was, I think George would have reacted in the same way. So Cooper says, why do you think George Zimmerman found Trayvon Martin suspicious then? Mm-hmm. You know, Mark, I've always said, if somebody gives you, starts shotgunning you, gives you a whole bunch of different answers, then that ain't the one. If you, if some guy calls his girlfriend and says, hey, I want to come over. And she says, well, no, I got to vacuum the floor. And he says, well, I'll help you vacuum. She says, well, I got to wash my hair. Well, I'll help you wash your hair. Oh, but I got a lot of, if somebody starts giving you a bunch of different answers,
that means that they
that ain't the one.
That ain't the one.
They
the
ain't
answer,
telling you
she doesn't want to see him okay. that night.
So let's just find out exactly what it is. I'm sure if she found this man innocent, she had a logical reason for why he was. So here's what she says. Why do you think George Zimmerman found Trayvon Martin suspicious? Because he was cutting through the back. That's number one. It was raining.
Wait. You're telling me a kid cut through the back of a backyard? I think death penalty.
And it was raining.
I think death penalty.
Obviously, that's what
I have never, ever seen a kid go through a backyard.
Now, let's keep going
they
with
all need to be
with
shot.
The reason.
All right, okay.
It was raining.
It was raining, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was his fault, too, by the way.
He said,
Trayvon should have controlled the weather and made it not rain.
He said he was looking in houses as he was walking down the road.
Uh-oh. You're not allowed to look at houses?
No, because you're
so
a black male.
So when I walk down the road, you have to look straight ahead.
Well, I guess she felt a black male, he's got to keep his eyes to the sidewalk. He might
she
look a white person
wasn't
in the
about
eye.
Race. It was because he was looking at the houses.
Let's see. Kind of just not having a purpose to where he was going.
Ah, he needed a purpose.
That's the problem. That's the problem, Mark.
Kids need purpose today.
Yeah, and here's the thing
And if
about
they don't
it.
Have a purpose today, we're going to shoot
them. Now, here's the thing about it, Mark. George Zimmerman is a very unique individual. He can look into the mind of a person walking by and determine whether that person has a purpose. He looked at him and he said, you know, that kid right there, no purpose whatsoever.
You know the definition of paranoia?
Yeah.
Paranoia is having a gun in your waistband, seeing a kid with his hand in his waistband and presuming that he's got a gun too.
Yeah. So he said
that's
he did.
The definition
so now,
of paranoia.
Okay, look, he was cutting through the back. It was raining. He was looking in houses. He didn't have a purpose. He didn't have a purpose, Mark.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems to me that if, I don't know, he has Skittles and Arizona tea.
Yeah, he wanted to make it home alive.
And there's a halftime game. Okay. A lot of people like their sporting events and don't want to miss
ask you a question.
The end of the All-Star game.
How would you determine whether or not a person has a purpose
if
you're looking at them in the dark,
in
the rain?
I know. Huh. You could ask them.
Right, well, yeah,
you could say, son, can I help you? You look lost. Can I help you find your way? And if you're a little bit nervous, you do that from your car.
So she goes on to say he
isn't
was,
that what normal people do?
Yeah. So she goes on to say, now this is why he stopped. Now, okay. He was stopping and starting, but I mean, that's George's rendition of it. But I think
George's
the situation where Trayvon got into him being late at night. Mark, I thought it was about 7 or 8 at night.
Yeah.
Late at night.
Yeah.
Okay. Late at night, dark at night. Generally, nights, that's how I tell it's night.
Well,
because it's dark.
In the wintertime at 7 o'clock, it's dark.
Yeah, so it was late at night, like 7 or 8 in the evening.
Right.
That's pretty late, you know. Well, late in the evening.
In the wintertime, 7 or 8 is dark. In the summertime, 7 or 8
is dark. And it was dark at night, and it was raining. So it was late at night at 7 or 8 p.m. It was dark, and it was raining. He was looking around, stopping and starting. Mark, I really haven't found what I think the Supreme Court would consider probable cause or reasonable suspicion
yet. If he hadn't
yet.
Been so black, maybe she could have seen him.
Yeah, she
in
left
the
that part. That had nothing to do with it, apparently, Mark. Okay. Trayvon, okay. And anybody would think anybody walking down the road, stopping and turning and looking, if that's exactly what happened, is suspicious. Oh, wait a minute. And George said he didn't recognize who he was. Now
that's the heart of it. And that's
it was
my
dark,
point about
but let's not forget.
That's why we all have to talk
dark,
to our neighbors and recognize.
But here's the thing about it. It was dark.
Right.
And it was raining.
Right.
And he.
How many people do you recognize it dark in the raining anyway?
So you couldn't see his face. Well, let's face it. If he couldn't see his face, he certainly couldn't recognize who he was. So now when asked why it had nothing to do with race, why it was because he was walking, he was stopping and starting. It was late at night, or maybe it wasn't. It was probably dark, of course, because it's at night. It's usually dark at night. He was looking around. George didn't know who he was. You remember what I said at the beginning of this, Mark? If somebody gives you a whole bunch of reasons, that probably ain't it.
Look, this is, by the way, and I don't want to get too much into the legal thicket. But
one other thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, Cooper says, well, that was a common belief on the jury that race was not, that race did not play a role. I think all of us thought that race did not play a role. Cooper, so nobody thought that race played a role? Juror, I don't think so. Now, so we
if
got
there had
six.
Been
wait,
a
wait
black
a minute.
Juror.
But here's the thing about it. We had an all-white defense. We had an all-white prosecution team. We had a white judge. We had a bunch of white jurors. All white jurors. We had a white defendant. The only person who wasn't white was the unfortunate victim here. So what a shock that an all white crew of people would get together and say, you know, do you think race was a, nah, couldn't be. So does that mean if we get six black people together and they sit around and they say, well, you know, race was a role. Well, that settles it. Bunch of six white people got together and said race played no role in it. It's over.
This is why I got a real problem with all-white juries. It's interesting. Legally, constitutionally.
But there was no black person anywhere here except the one that got shot.
There were some witnesses, but that's it. But to me, even the witnesses, juror B37 says a lot about them. When she talks about Rachel Juntel, and she says, I couldn't understand a word that girl was saying. You know, she speaks it. She didn't say this, but in my mind, I heard her say, oh, she speaks in an African-American dialect I couldn't understand. Yeah. That's how I interpreted when she said, I couldn't understand a word she said. She said, that's something about, well, that's the way they talk.
Oh, yeah.
They talk. She, Rachel and Trayvon, that's the way they talk. You know, I've lived in America long enough. I've heard all kinds of speech patterns. I've heard Southern speech patterns. I've heard New York speech patterns. California, Boston, the Midwest. Yes, there's African American speech patterns. There's Latino speech patterns, Jewish speech patterns. You name it. We're a diverse society. But when she says that's how they talk, to me, she's implicitly saying they, not we. They, those people, those other. That's how they talk.
Let me put out the number because after the break at 6:30, we're going to take some phone calls. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. WPFW 89.3 FM Washington here in D.C. WPFW.org online. Garland Nixon and I am here with Mark Levine. We're talking Trayvon Martin. 202-588-0893. Mark, something else interesting we're going to touch a couple things here before we get into our callers start lighting up the lines. When asked about some of the witnesses, Anderson Cooper says, so you think, and what made you think it was George Zimmerman's voice? Because the evidence that he was the one that got beaten. So you think he was the one who had cuts, had abrasions, he was the one getting hit, he was the one calling for help. Now listen to this, why she thought it was him. Well, because of the witnesses of John Good saw Trayvon on top of George, not necessarily hitting him, because it was so dark he couldn't see. Now, let me understand this, Mark. He saw Trayvon on top of him, hitting him, because it was so dark, he couldn't see. But he saw blows down towards George, and he could tell that it was Zimmerman on the bottom. So he looked out in the rain, and it was dark, and he saw something that he couldn't see because it was dark. And so clearly, if you can't see, as she said, because it was so dark, he couldn't see. So tell me, Mark, what was it? It was black, dark, I couldn't see a thing. All right, well, testify what you saw. I saw that guy on the bottom. Well, that settles it.
Well, I think he testified it was about the color of the stuff that they were wearing. But the other thing about John Good's testimony, which was the strongest testimony for the defense, is that he said he saw them for about 8 to 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, we know from the 911 tape, this is a scuffle that lasted minutes. We don't quite know how long. A lot longer than 8 to 10 seconds. It's quite possible that in the middle of a drawn-out, I mean, literally fight to the death, or whatever Zimmerman was doing, that at some point Trayvon got on top for 8 seconds.
Right.
That's quite possible. You know, if a guy comes out and attacks you and says, you know, what are you doing here and get out of here or whatever, who knows what happened. The heart of the issue for me, though, that goes beyond the specific facts of this case, is when are we in America going to stop seeing other Americans as so different from ourselves that somehow we have to mistrust them before we even speak with them? Zimmerman mistrusted this black kid just because he was there, just because he existed. It's the same people, cops who mistrust someone for driving while black, just because they look black, or black people who mistrust white people just because they're white. When are we going to judge people by the content of their character rather than by the color of their skin? If you see somebody, talk to them. And then if they give you reason to mistrust them, fine. But we have Americans presuming guilt until proven innocent with anyone who doesn't isn't of their community. And that's the danger that I've been talking about.
But there's some broader institutional issues here. If you talk about the case, a couple of things. Number one, the fact, as I said, you've got, you know, white judge, white defense, white
judge.
Jury,
by the way, I think the judge and the prosecution made tremendous errors.
Let me say one thing right off the bat. And this is the issue with having no black people involved. The judge ruled that they couldn't call it racial profiling.
Right.
That they had to say criminal profiling. Right. They had about 30 to 31 recordings of George Zimmerman calling the police saying there's a black male, a black person, a black youth. Every one of them, he said, there's a black person out there. The issue of racial profiling was very, very much there. They had a George Zimmerman's cousin who said, I think he's a racist, and gave some other reasons. Can't bring him in there because you can't bring race into the issue. However, the defense team, when talking to Rachel Jontel, asked her, well, you know, the creepy you-know-what stuff, do you think that's racist? Does that sound racist? Now, Mark, from my perspective, if somebody opens the door, you can walk through. Once they started asking questioning a witness, is that racist? Is this racist? Asking this person for their perspective, and from the prosecution team, I would have went on there and started asking a bunch of questions about race too, and said to the judge, I need to bring in my evidence. They have brought in the issue of race. They have asked about racists. I'm trying to rebut that. I've got evidence regarding race. Hey, I wasn't going to bring it in. You said we couldn't. But if they're going to bring in race, I cannot properly prosecute this case unless I am able to rebut. I ask for a change. You to change your mind, Judge, and allow me to bring this stuff in. And I think the prosecution should have walked. I mean, to me, the defense opened that door a mile wide and they didn't walk through it. Now, all that, I'll say this. From the looks of B-37, it wouldn't matter if they had a videotaped confession of George Zimmerman saying that he chased Trayvon Martin down and that somebody paid him $50,000 as a hitman. It wouldn't matter. B-37 was going to say innocent.
Okay, but the beauty of the system, the jury system, is that there's more than B-37 on that jury. She said that when they got back to that jury room, three of them wanted to charge him, two with manslaughter, one with second-degree murder, and three did not. Now, I hate six-person juries. I believe in 12-person juries. That's the way it was done for hundreds of years. I think six people are much more likely to get it wrong. I think had there been a 12-person jury, they couldn't have kept all the blacks off the panel. You know, the defense struck two black people. And some people have asked me as a lawyer, can you just strike black people? I thought that's illegal.
You don't have to say why you're striking them.
Well, no, but it's interesting. If the criminal defendant is African American, and
the jury of your peers,
prosecution strikes all the blacks from the jury. Today, under constitutional law, you can go up, it's called a Batson defense, and you can say, hey, they struck all the blacks from the jury, even though they didn't give a reason, and you can get that case reversed. You cannot be convicted by an all-white jury when there are blacks in the community. However, because the victim was black rather than the criminal defendant, that wasn't available.
And we're going to go to we're going to go to a break here, and we're going to come back. We're going to take some calls.
202-588-0893.
Attention WPFW listeners. The station will be operating at low power for approximately 4 to 6 weeks. While we continue to stream at WPFW.org, the FM power will continue to be at low or reduced power as the lead abatement continues at the transmitter site. We apologize for the inconvenience. This is a mandatory process to ensure continued operation from this site.
You are listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. News Views, Garland Nixon here with
Mark Levine.
And we got a bunch of people on the line to talk about the Trayvon Martin case, to talk about the issues. And as I said, to break the mark, you know, there's two issues. There is the broad context of the issue of race in America today that we need to address. But there is a more immediate, issue also, and that is that on a day-to-day basis, African-Americans, particularly African-American males, fear for their safety, and fear that, justifiably so, that they're not going to get a fair shake in the criminal justice system. So, you know, it's kind of like, yes, in the long run, you should, you know, eat well and exercise so you won't, you know, so you won't get sick and die early. But by the same token, you know, if there's a bear about to eat you today, you want to try to hide from the bear. So, you know.
Let me say, Garland, there are two fears that need to be addressed and conquered. One is, you're absolutely right, black men fearing the justice system, fearing creepy guys.
And that's
guns.
A sad thing.
That's a
fearing
very, very
the
sad
so-called
thing.
Justice system.
That's a very
system.
Sad thing. Equally sad and equally harmful to African Americans is the white fear of black males. The fear by many white people that that's obvious.
Oh, might I add
that a black man, just by virtue of being a black man, is somehow dangerous or someone that they have to avoid.
We're going to go to callers, but might I add,
this is what the president was talking
about
today. That
is stoked daily by the right wing.
Sure.
In America.
Absolutely.
Daily
absolutely.
Stoked
absolutely.
By the right. Be afraid of these people.
Absolutely.
They're taking your money. The blah people, as Rick Santorum would say, be afraid of these blah people.
Did you see President Obama today?
No, but we're going to go to
okay.
some callers.
Just real quick, you got to listen to President Obama. He mentioned today something I never heard him say before. He said that he himself has been profiled.
There's
he
no
himself
doubt. I knew that.
Has been in an elevator and a woman has held her purse tightly. He himself has driven in a car and seen people lock their doors. So the president, I think, it was a way to convey to a lot of white people who maybe didn't realize this happens to every black in America. It was a great way to convey that lesson tonight.
Ramey.
Oh, Eric Ramey. How are you, sir?
Mark, how's it going?
I'm good. I'm going to need a drink after today's show. I'm still a little worked
really,
out.
Really? I had one before the show. Oh,
but go,
never mind.
Talk to us, Eric.
Garland, how you doing?
Oh, just wonderful.
I have two quick points. At the end of the day, and I mean, no matter who was on top, no matter whose voice was there, I mean, there's one simple fact I think the prosecution should have driven home, or perhaps 3 points. There's a teenager walking. He's being stalked by an armed individual,
yep.
an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And minutes, perhaps seconds or minutes later, the kid is dead as a result of a bullet wound fired by the armed stalker.
Straight through the heart.
I mean, that's just real. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that's...
It's undisputable.
Yeah, the second thing that I really find disturbing, you have individuals saying, well, Zimmerman wasn't white, he was Latino.
He was a white Hispanic. Who cares?
Yeah, that's supposed to somehow diminish what happened.
Yeah.
Right. And in the context of American politics and American social structure, he was viewed by America as a white
You know
person.
What? There's white Latinos and there's black
yeah.
Latinos. Next question.
Okay,
yeah.
But the bottom of the line is young black males are being used as target practice.
Yeah. And that's the fact of the matter. And, you know, let me throw this out there because of all of the questions, thanks, Eric, all of the issues about, you know, stand your ground defense and he was in fear for his life, et cetera. If, in fact, you know, one of the things that juror B37 said was that the only thing they focused on was at the second he pulled the
That's
trigger
right.
that he was in fear for his life and
That's
you
right.
couldn't take into account the totality of the circumstances.
Right.
If that is true, Mark.
And you can only hear from the
right.
guy who's alive and not
right.
the guy who's
and
dead.
And if that is true, then I guess I can walk up to Mark, mm-hmm. punch him in the face,
right.
hit him with a baseball
bat. And if I hit
bat,
you back, you can shoot
right.
me.
Yeah. You know, talk about his family, you know, threaten to rape his children. I can do everything I can and tell Mark, I'm going to kill you.
Right. And then if I jump
And then
you
Mark jumps
you,
on me, and I
shoot
him,
me.
And I say, "But you can't take in contact into the. You can't take it into. You can't consider the fact that number one, somebody gave me $10,000 an hour ago to kill Mark, and number two, I started the fight with him, and I told him I was going to kill him, and well, I shot at him once or twice because he shot back, which means at the moment I pulled the trigger." I was in fear for my life. And you can't consider anything
this
else.
This is the legal point that has not gotten hardly any discussion on CNN or Headline News or even MSNBC. In the Florida Stand Your Ground statute, look it up. I posted on my website. I think it's 0.056. It says clearly that if you are the initial aggressor, if you're the person who started the conflict, you don't have a right to use Stand Your Ground.
Yeah.
You have to withdraw. The prosecution brought this statute to the judge's attention, so they wanted to include the jury instructions. The defense objected, and this
no,
judge made a terrible mistake. She did not include it. I don't think the prosecution fought hard enough. I thought the prosecution was lousy for a lot of reasons. But Florida law says you cannot be the initial aggressor. I cannot pick a fight with you, and then you start winning, and then I pull out a gun and shoot you. This instruction. This has not been talked about. This instruction was not given. It should have been given. It was, in my mind, legal error. And had that instruction been given, then I think, maybe not juror B37, but other jurors, having read the proper jury instruction, I think would have convicted George Zimmerman of manslaughter. So I stand by my prediction that had the law been followed as written, he would have been convicted.
I don't think there was anything with that jury that could have happened that would have. But we've got Jill next. Jill's going to tell us. Jill, welcome to WPFW.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm listening to your conversation, and I will say, well, for the most part, I agree with what you guys are saying. But here's the part and the issue that I don't think that we as Black Americans have addressed. And it's mostly because we seem to have dropped the ball since the whole 1960s visual, I should say, civil rights struggle kind of went to end. You didn't see any more marching and any more, you know, Martin Luther King and so on and so forth. But what I'm going to say is this. No matter what, that juror, B-57 or whoever she was, when she sat there and she was being interviewed by Anderson Cooper, Anderson Cooper did say to her, well, what do you think about Raisa Gentile? And she said, well, overall, I didn't think she was credible. Well, what are your reasons why? Well, and of course she said, well, she didn't feel like she had the proper education, essentially is what she was saying.
She couldn't understand what Rachel was saying.
Right. So she couldn't understand
what
she was saying.
She couldn't speak her language, so she must not be an idiot.
Right.
Yes, but what she said, in totality, with all of her remarks taken into effect, and what so many other people had the nerve to say, including that stupid Larry Elder, was that she was not an educated woman. Well, and I submit to you that that juror, B-57, she wasn't very well educated either. Not only that, Michelle Obama herself, with a PhD and all, could have been the last person that Trayvon was talking to, could have been the person who actually got up on that stand and testified to what that conversation was about. That itself would not have changed the outcome of this, the trial.
I'm with you, Jill.
And it is because of racism. And why? Because the groundwork had already been laid. When George Zimmerman's white Spanish stuff walked into that precinct, there was not a Black officer around. There was not a Black officer there during the initial investigation and interrogations. There were no investigations done properly. The prosecution did not want to bring that case. The prosecution only brought that case because they submitted to public pressure.
That's true.
Therefore, the groundwork had already been laid. And I say that we need to take a look at this and we need to start doing things because now it's time to start implementing different laws and so forth regarding the disparities of Black men and women with regard to the judicial system, because it's not only in Florida. I'm right here in Washington, D.C., and I picked my child up one summer. He was a teenager at this time from Maryland University. He was on a camp there, something that they used to call Upward Bound, and I came to pick him up. And I will tell you that I had a gun held to my head.
Wow. By whom? A cop?
A Black woman, okay?
By a cop?
By a police officer. And they were, all of them were white except for the Asian police officer, and the Asian was the one that did it.
Yeah, that's thank you very much, Jill.
Wow,
so we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Everywhere. It's called racism. We need to understand that these white people's end game is to put us back in chains, and we need to stop fighting one another and stop getting hurt every time the truth gets told about one of us, and start really doing the things that we got to do. You know, Raisa Gentile, God bless her soul, but if I was her mother, she would not have been acceptable to me. There's no way in hell my child would have been 19 years old and speaking and acting the way and conducting herself the way that she was.
All right. Well, thank you, Jill. I hate to cut you a little bit short, but we've got some other people on the line here.
Let me
read one thing.
Go ahead.
She mentioned and I mentioned that both of us had no faith that that there was going to be a fair finding by the jury. Let me just read something the juror said when asked, what do you think of George Zimmerman? This is a juror. I think George Zimmerman is a man whose heart was in the right place.
Yeah, I know. I heard him.
But just got displaced by the vandalism in the neighborhood and wanted to catch these people so badly that he went above and beyond what he really should have done. Now, Mark, is there any instance where the term above beyond can be used in the pejorative sense? Above and beyond always means somebody did. It's usually military. It's usually
she
somebody went above and beyond.
Right. With George Zimmerman.
He went above and beyond
she
what he really should have done.
She did not identify with Trayvon Martin.
But I think his heart was in the right place. That's what she said about him.
She identified
this poor guy.
With George.
That was vandalism.
She identified with the guy saying,
I think he's guilty.
I don't want all these criminals in my neighborhood.
Now, this is
she didn't identify with a 17-year-old kid trying to get back to a basketball game and bring food for his little brother.
Here's what she said. I think he's guilty. Do you think he's guilty of something? I think he's guilty of not using good judgment. When he was in the car and called 911, he should have gotten out of that car. But the 911 operator also, when he was talking to him, kind of egged him on. I don't know if it's their policy to tell them what to do, not to get out of the car, to stay in the car. You do know it's their policy because they specifically told him what to do. But that's kind of like when somebody says, you know, somebody gets hit with a baseball bat. He says, well, I don't know if he should have quite hit him that hard. What they're really saying is he shouldn't hit him that hard. But let me finish this.
All right.
I don't know if it's their policy, but I think they should have said, stay in your car, not can you see where he's gone. So, Mark, they egged him on. Now, if somebody, let's just say you saw a pack of rabid wolves running by your car in your neighborhood, and you called the police and said, hey, there's a pack of rabid wolves, and they said, can you see where they've gone? What, Mark, wouldn't you interpret that to mean, I better jump out of the car and chase these wolves?
No. Because when the 911 operator says, we don't need you.
She said, now, Mark, don't get out and go after the wolves.
Right.
Can you see where they've gone?
Exactly.
Well, anybody would interpret that to mean get out and go after the wolves while he was ignorant. You know what? They practically dragged him out of the car, according to her, and threw him at Trayvon Martin.
God, there's so many things I want to say.
Okay, but let's go back to we got people.
Real quick. First of all, because a young woman is uneducated does not mean she can't tell the truth. Let's please separate that right now. And I'm someone who has a lot of education. Education and ability to tell the truth have nothing whatsoever
all
to
we've
do with
each do.
Other. Oh. There are educated liars, and there are people who are uneducated and as honest as can be.
All you got to do at the beginning of the trial is go through the witness and say, who has the highest education? Well, I got a PhD.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that doesn't
what is your relationship to the defendant? I'm his brother. Oh, okay. How about you? Well, I don't have any education, but I was standing next to the crime and I saw the whole thing. I'm sorry, you don't have enough education.
Yeah,
sure, you witnessed everything and you videotaped it, but we can't even let your videotape in because you're not highly educated enough. But that's not really what she meant. That's not really what she meant.
She identified with George Zimmerman. The whole point of what I began this long monologue about was that we've got to stop identifying only with people who share our skin color. She identified, you know, she could have identified with Trayvon Martin. Women should be able to identify with someone who's being chased by a creepy guy, right? Women are often nervous if they're stalked by a creepy guy. This is something that she could have identified as a fellow vulnerable human being with this poor boy.
But we've got to understand that this is what we are dealing with in our criminal justice system, and we've got to figure out, we've got to start coming up with some ways to admit it and be mitigated.
They needed to have a black person on the jury.
Let's go to Ramon. Ramon, welcome to WPFW.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Ramon.
Garland, how are you guys
doing? Oh, man, great to hear from you, buddy.
Hey, yeah, long time no hear. Mark, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
You know, over the years, I've had a problem with you and your soapbox, but I've got to tell you, today at the start of the show.
You like my soapbox today?
Oh, man, you and your soapbox, that's the kind of soap that if a few people more picked up that bar of soap, we may possibly just begin to wash the filthy stains that we have off of this country.
I'm glad, brother, you and I can agree on this one. I'm very glad, because this hit me home hard.
And another, the second thing is, really, I mean, as interesting as the conversation is, we need to get beyond the sham of a trial, because that's exactly what it was. If you looked at the trial, it looked as though the prosecution was working for the defense. There was a woman on MSNBC, a blonde lady. She's a lawyer, and she was so disturbed at this, as a lot of people with legal backgrounds, Garland, I know you.
I saw it.
I mean, the prosecution, it was a sham.
Let me give you the clearest error they made. Just if anyone says, what did they mess up? Here's the clearest error in the book. You have a Fifth Amendment right not to testify, all right? So when the defendant chooses not to testify, why aren't they testifying? Well, they have a legal right to do so, but usually because they fear cross-examination. They don't want to be tripped up by really hard questions. What did the prosecution allow Zimmerman to do? They allowed him to testify. They showed all his talks with the police, all his talks on Fox News. They allowed him to give his side of the story and not be cross-examined. that's a defense dream to have your client be able to tell his side of the story and not be cross-examined. That juror repeated everything George Zimmerman said as if it were true. Had the prosecution not put in George Zimmerman's words, maybe there would have been a little more fairness in that jury.
Well, so
you're absolutely right. The prosecution was awful.
There was another horrible one, and that was when that police officer got on and they said, do you think George Zimmerman is truthful? And he said,
you're not even allowed to ask that
question.
You
have got to object.
That's right.
He has no foundational basis to make
that decision.
You're not
allowed to vouch for someone's credibility at trial unless it's been attacked.
Right. Yeah,
that's the law.
This is the very thing that I'm saying. And excuse me for this here, but this is beating a dead horse. And excuse the word dead. But this is really beating a dead horse. The sister that was on before me is exactly right. We as people have lost some credibility and lost some momentum from the civil rights days of the 60s, and maybe this will get us to take it back up.
I hope so.
And find out. And what I really would like to see you guys do is, you know, where do we go from here? Forget this trial. I mean, it was a crock of bull. Where do we go from here?
Well, that's why I began on my soapbox, because I want to get past the trial and get people talking to
each other.
Let me just do this real quickly, and then I'll get off. One of the things, I mean, Stevie Wonder said, hey, as long as they have a stand your ground law in Florida or wherever else they have it, I will not perform there. I mean, and the reaction from Florida is, I mean, they can say that. Lil Wayne can say that. Anybody can say that. The people in Florida can say, well, I don't want them NIs here anyway, so that, you know, that's not doing anything for me. What we need to have is cooperation now from well-thinking, you know, proper, on the proper side of history, white entertainers, like a Justin Bieber who's making money thinking he's...
I love the idea of a boycott. Love the idea.
Somebody else, Taylor Swift, to come out and say, you know what, this one hurt a little bit too much. I'm in support of that either. I'm not going to perform in a stand-your-ground state, because that same kind of effort is what brought Sun City down
in South Absolutely
Africa,
right.
And we need that same kind of thing here. And that comes from a proper civil rights push, like the sister said. We're lacking on that.
Thank you, Ramon.
Great idea, Ramon.
And
great
call. Let me throw this in there, because one of the things he said was great, you know, that we lost momentum. Here's something that I believe when we talk about the civil rights and how far we've come issue. I don't think that we're losing momentum or that we're going in the wrong direction. I think we were fooling ourselves to believe that we had come further than we really had. All this post-racial stuff. You don't have everything's wonderful, we're all hugging and singing kumbaya, and then something like that happens and we backslid. That's not the issue. We were not admitting, and America wants to feel good about itself and talk about how wonderful and how, you know, the free and the brave and everything's equal, and that's not the case. What we have to do is stop denying that there are very serious issues. The people say it had nothing to do with race, but all everybody talks about on all the channels all the time is the issue of race. It is real, and we've got to stop. We've got to stop saying, you know, we're going in the wrong direction or we're losing ground. No, this is where we are. We haven't. We just really haven't come as far as we would like to believe that we've.
I was watching Anderson Cooper with the juror B57 or whatever her name was, and talking with various commentators. And they were talking about how astonishing it was that she so identified with George Zimmerman.
Yeah,
I mean, she basically was walking in his shoes. And so one of the commentators said, well, she's not going to say she's racist. No one admits they're racist. And Anderson Cooper said, yeah, I've interviewed people in the Ku Klux Klan. They say they're not racist.
Well, let me say this.
So no one says they're racist.
And let's be real about this thing. We've got to be real about this. Let me give you an example. An example, Mark. I'll throw a couple examples out there. And if you ask any white person, if you were accused of killing a black guy and you walked in and you realized that the prosecution was all black, that the defense team was all black, the judge was all black, and the jury was all black, do you feel like
nervous.
You would get a fair shake?
Yeah.
Do you feel like maybe they may just idea? You wouldn't feel so good.
You'd nervous.
Be packing your toothbrush.
That's true.
Here's the reality.
Same
Mark.
Is true if you killed an Asian
were,
kid and everyone was Asian.
If you're Jewish,
right.
If you were to be in the occupied territory somewhere and you were accused of killing a Palestinian guy and you weren't even in town
nervous.
And
I'd
you look and there was all Palestinians, prosecution, Palestinian judge, Palestinian jury. Do you feel like you'd get a fair shake?
I'd be very
no,
nervous.
You wouldn't feel like you'd get a fair shake.
Right.
So we're not talking about something that is specific. specific to America.
That's right.
We're talking about accepting
in groups and out groups.
Right.
It's all about
right.
people sticking only
accepting
with their
group. The reality, if it was Ireland and the issue was Catholic and Protestant.
That's right.
That if you have all of one group
judging another
judging
group,
someone
it's
else,
got to be unfair.
It's not
which
going
is
to be
why
fair
there
without
have
that
been
level
a black,
of diversity.
There should have been a black person on that jury. There were two that were struck, both by the defense. And now I understand the prosecution actually struck a black juror.
Well, they screwed up so bad, they might as well had.
Because he watched Fox News. First of all, we need to get rid of six-person juries. You want to fight something? Don't just fight stand your ground.
Do we have any calls?
Get rid of six-person juries.
Well, let's try to get another. We only got a minute or so left here. Let's get another caller in. We got
Hey, Soso.
Hey, Soso.
Hello, sir.
Are you there?
Hey, Soso?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Oh, excuse me.
There we go. Welcome to WPFW.
Woman. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because Yes, hello?
Yes. Speak into the phone, please.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm calling responding to the comment about the boycott and how that was the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I think more than looking external at entertainers to make a stance, I think that we the people need to make the stance. I think
don't go to Disney World.
We won't go to Disney World.
Yeah.
I canceled a trip with my girlfriends to Florida. Hmm. We need to make the stand and stop looking for the solution to come from outside of ourselves.
That's a good point.
Let me say something that would probably work a little more effective. Disney World won't lose a lot of sleep if black people don't go to Disney World. Let me tell you what would freak Disney World out. If there was 5,000 black people in front of Disney World picketing, holding up signs.
Yeah, maybe.
Let me tell you something. Disney World would come down on the government and say, hey, let me tell you something. We pay a whole lot of taxes. Because why?
So we shouldn't
because
stay away.
What
maybe
we're
we
just talking
go,
about,
go there
because it would
fight.
Scare the living daylight. And white people would say, all these white people would say from, you know, Wisconsin and Idaho, for God's sake, I ain't going to Disney. There's black people running around all over the place holding signs.
God.
I'm scared to death. As the juror said, there's more than one black person. They must be wrong. Rioting, right? So at any rate, so I think that
so maybe protest rather
protesting
than
in areas that are heavily used in tourism, I think would be much more effective because it's legal, it's First Amendment, it would freak everybody out. So Mark, if somebody wants to get in touch with you,
Go to my website marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk. I'd love to hear what you thought of my soapbox today.
All right,
let me know when. And this entire show will be on marklevinetalk.com.
I thought you were standing on a milk crate, or orange crate. My name is Garland Nixon, WPFW 89.3 FM, on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on News Views. If you want to get in touch with me, you can at Garland Nixon on Twitter. You can Facebook me, Garland Nixon, or Garland N, and the N as in Nixon, Garland N at gmail.com.
I'm on Facebook, too, and I'll friend you automatically. Just say hello, and you're my friend.
Garland N at gmail.com. Coming up next, we got Robin Holden and Carol
to
Tyson.
Hopefully calm us down
some
a little
great,
bit.
Great music.
Because we're worked
tuned.
Up.
Definitely stay tuned. You're going to hear good music.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.